This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Well, it's Friday and time for our week in review. And it was a tough week for some neighborhoods in Boston. It started with 4 deaths and 9 injuries and stabbings and shootings on Independence Day. And then it got worse yesterday when bullets from a drive-by shooting struck a window at a middle school in Dorchester where a summer camp was in session. Then later, also in Dorchester, another man was fatally shot. Here's Boston Police Superintendent William Evan.
We have had a rough past week, but year to date, our homicides are down.
We'll also be talking about the murder of a recent high school graduate in Wayland, allegedly by her ex-boyfriend, and we'll discuss recent developments in the 2012 race for the Senate and the state budget that's currently sitting on Governor Deval Patrick's desk. So joining us to do all that is Peter Canellos. He's editorial page editor of the Boston Globe. Hi there, Peter.
Hi, Meghna.
And also with us today is Craig Sandler. He is general manager of the Statehouse News Service. Hi there, Craig.
Pleasure to be here. How are you?
I'm doing all right, although it was a very difficult start to the week, especially over the weekend for the city of Boston. And let's start with a little bit more about the violence that really sort of stained not only the 4th of July, but continued throughout this week. As we just heard Boston Police Superintendent William Evan saying homicides are actually down overall, according to BP Boston Police data. There have been 24 homicides this year compared to 32 by this time last year. But as 10 Point Coalition Executive Director, the Reverend Jeffrey Brown, said, those statistics, according to him, aren't necessarily soothing. Let's listen.
Anytime you have someone shot, killed in your neighborhood, it doesn't feel like it's less violent.
So, Peter Canellos, let's just start with that idea. I mean, every time the numbers might say something, but anytime we have such a huge spike in violence like we saw this week, it still feels significant nevertheless.
Well, I think it's especially significant because it's just the beginning of the summer. And if this spike continues, I think we will be statistically ahead of last year. So, even that, sort of camouflage won't exist. Having said last week that I was pretty confident the police had learned a lot and were on top of things, I have to say the events of the last week did suggest a ratcheting up of gang activity. And while it seems like the police are taking it very seriously and are utilizing a number of measures, I think that the breadth of the incidents that took place over the weekend, and the breadth, I mean, it was spread out through several neighborhoods, suggests a wider problem than just, one bad block, one bad gang, one bad incident.
Which is oftentimes what we hear, that it's just there's pockets in neighborhoods. I mean, apparently today Boston police did a sweep and arrested some 20 people. The other thing, Craig Sandler, that was raised, the other issue that was raised in the wake of all this violence this week, is this question of so-called problem properties, that there are there may be many of them, but sort of epicenters where neighbors call all the time because there's drug activity, petty theft, things like that, and that the city of Boston now says we got to focus on cleaning up these properties.
Yeah, and I mean Ed Davis, the chief in Boston, has a good background in addressing just that problem because he comes from Lowell, and Lowell is a classic model for just that kind of pocket, the Acre in Lowell, and places in the city where. It's sort of like the William Bratton model where you get the broken window and the one bad house, and that just encourages people to feel, like they have leave to act, to behave as they wish. I think, coming on the shooting of AJ, too, having that spate of violence is the reason it gets on the front page of the Boston Globe, and then once it's on the front page of the Boston Globe, it definitely feels worse. It puts it in the conversation. And so I think, perhaps we do need to respect the statistics a little bit and understand that homicides really are down. If the Globe had led with homicides down, we might not be having the same conversation. But coming on the heels of AJ, it was imperative that, the lid come down, that a clamp be put on. It didn't happen, and that's really why it feels so awful.
Well, you mentioned Boston Police Commissioner Ed Davis. We have a little bit of tape from him. Boston Police Commissioner, yes. Speaking today.
We're very focused on this. We're very much aware of the ongoing drama that's occurring, and we're looking to pull the pin out of it at any place that we can. So if we can take out one individual who was responsible for some of the background stuff here, we're going to do that also. So it's not just the shooter that has to worry. It's the whole gang around him.
Peter, I'm going to come to you in a second, but Craig is shaking his head back and forth. No, why?
Well, because I love Ed Davis. He's about as good as they come. But the fact is, you hear those sound bites over and over again, and then I guess I feel a little bit Well, I won't say I feel discouraged. I feel like it's time for something new. That is not something that we haven't heard before. And there are, you know, you say, well, what could possibly be new? Well, guess what? We probably have to go to the extreme in both cases. We have to have harsher penalties for crime, and we have to have more money and investment in social programs.
Okay. Well, Peter Canales, on that note, I mean, a supposedly new thing was proposed by Governor Deval Patrick back in May. I mean, he made this big announcement of a comprehensive sort of anti-crime, anti-violence package. $10 million from the legislature to target youth violence, changing some statutes so that certain crimes can be tried under organized crime laws. You know, it's just a lot was proposed and there was a lot of excitement around it, but I'm not sure I've heard if that's gone anywhere. Peter, your thoughts on these comprehensive
takes? Well, it hasn't. If it's the same legislation that I think you're talking about, I mean, I think it's also tied up into the merging of parole and probation and all of that stuff, too. I think that was an ambitious and kind of basically right-headed plan that the governor had. Craig may know a little bit more about where it is in the legislature right now. But I do want to raise one concern about Ed Davis's plans, and that is it's perfectly justified to hear a complaint about drug activity in a certain building and then send the police in to investigate. That's totally fine. But if what the city is doing is sort of stockpiling complaints so that if there's a crime spree, they have some pretext for raiding a particular house or something like that, it can often lead to police excesses.
Right.
And we saw this during the violent period of the late 80s and early 90s when a bunch of prosecutions went belly up because they – frankly, arrested the wrong people. So, whether the Globes play a role in it or not, I think that people need to ratchet back their expectations of the police a little so that the police don't feel the need to exceed their authority.
Well, but nothing ever seems to change, you know, and what people want is for things to change. So what exactly does that look like? I actually think that it wouldn't necessarily be excessive to have a larger police presence. I think it wouldn't be excessive to increase the penalties for a range of crimes, gang activity and drug offenses, and make examples of some people. And I know that's tough on crime rhetoric, but I would combine it with lots of compassionate spending on social programs and intervention.
I think that's exactly the approach to go. But just to defend my earlier comment, I mean, you wouldn't want somebody barging into your house in the midst of a crime spree because, you know, 7 months ago somebody said they saw something suspicious going on around there. I mean, there has to be a probable cause.
If it saved a life, I mean, if you want change, and I think it's inevitable that if you've got a fairly, I won't say aggressive because that's a dangerous word, assertive police force, I think that sometimes mistakes are going to be made, which is not to defend police excess, but I'm saying we're going to have the same exactly this conversation 5 years from now, unless we, in fact, let's face it, unless we take some chances.
You know, what I'm hearing in both your voices is a palpable sense of frustration that an old problem is rearing its ugly head again in Boston.
There is that sense of frustration, but I think Craig is completely right when he talks about a comprehensive solution that takes account of the causes of crime and understands the community and works with the community and all of that. And if that's what you're talking about, that's great. But you know, there are recognized boundaries that shouldn't be crossed.
Okay, but not only that, Peter. What I'm saying is people never talk about getting tougher in both directions. I know in one direction you're getting more compassionate, but you're getting tougher on social problems simultaneously with getting tougher on crime. Mm-hmm. The two never seem to go in tandem, and I wish they would.
So we're going to have to move away from this, sadly, away from this topic for now, because there's just so much to talk about. But I imagine, though, I'm just going to put my own 2 cents where it's worth out there, that, you know, when you do go out there and you talk to people who are living in these neighborhoods, that's exactly what they want. They probably want getting tougher on both sides. Social support, and they want more support from law enforcement. Again, you know, listeners, we want to hear from you about this, so send us your comments at radioboston.org. You're obviously hearing a lot about what we think, but your thoughts are equally, perhaps even more valid. But if I may, we're going to move on to another crime. This one happened in Wayland, and that is the murder of 18-year-old Lauren Astley. She was a recent high school graduate. The accused person in this crime is an ex-boyfriend, Nathaniel Fujita, and her father, Astley's father, has been remarkable in his public appearances this week in the wake of his daughter's murder, and he's been very outspoken and compassionate about the pain his family is feeling, but also the pain that the accused killer, Nathaniel Fujita's family, is feeling as well. So let's listen to that.
Lauren's mother and I share the anguish of Nate's parents, who put so much caring and love into Nate and my daughter as well. We want them to know that.
So, Peter Canellos, you know what, actually, I had planned to ask you guys questions about media the media's treatment of this, and maybe we can talk about that in a minute, but listening to this tape, I have to say, what it makes me think of is the parent of any murdered child, and that when this happens, whether it's in Wayland or in Dorchester, they have to deal with the onslaught of our attention and just the unimaginable heartbreak of losing their child. And so, you know, to hear parents stand up and deal with this issue in such grace, I have to say, is both humbling and inspiring. So not a question there, but just a reaction to the tape, Peter.
Yeah, I certainly agree with you. I think that it's very understandable that with his daughter dead, you know, he realizes that, you know, absolutely demonizing the murder, the alleged murderer is probably counterproductive on some level, and that, you know, the other people surrounding the situation are grieving as well. You also can't help but think this is a man who is a Wayland School Committee member, a former educator himself, is sort of channeling some understanding from his past life working in schools, you know, wanting to help the community heal. But you also wonder if after he gets past that training, if he's going to start feeling something else, which a lot of the parents of murdered children feel, which is the reaction of anger and outrage and horror and the constant looking back on was there something that could have stopped this.
Craig, your thoughts on this?
No, I mean, there's often moments of beauty and tragedy, you know, and I think that this was, it's a little odd to say it, but it was a beautiful moment. I think it was probably a beautiful moment for a lot of people because of the forgiveness, because of the sentiment. And I suspect that, of course, Peter, you're right, he'll probably go through that part of it, but then again, in the long run, I think that he'll probably feel very, very good about the role he played at that moment. It reminds me of, I don't remember her name, but who was the 6-year-old paraplegic who forgave her shooter a couple of years ago? You know, it reminded me of that moment. And those moments are always helpful. I'm sure that they are helpful for everyone, helpful for the community. And this was one of those moments.
Well, so here's the question that I did want to ask you, because, you know, in our staff meeting this morning, we were kind of struggling. Like, should we, you know, talk about the Wayland murder right on the heels of having a discussion about the deaths and killings in Boston? Because, you know, it seems like apples and oranges, but the frank truth of the matter is that the media is going to be paying a lot of attention to the Wayland investigation as it goes on. And as we've seen before, there are ebbs and flows to the interest that the media has in violence that happens in certain Boston neighborhoods. So, you know, Peter Canellos, you're in charge of the editorial page there at the Globe. How do you guys deal with, you know, deciding how long to chase after a story like the one in Wayland?
Well, our concerns are a little bit different. I mean, we did do an editorial today about the father's unusual comments, but we had not done one before that about the case. While we have done editorials about the violent situation, particularly after the 4-year-old was shot, that's just a point of fact. But, you know, having been involved in these decisions for a long time, I can remember, you know, 15 or 20 years ago, the feeling was, you know, when you covered something like the Wayland thing, it was a shock that here in the, you know, protected suburbs, that such a terrible thing could happen. I think that we've matured as a society in a lot of ways and are able to process these things differently and appropriately. So the coverage of the Wayland murder has not really been like, my God, the calm of this placid community has been shocked. Right. It was what causes teens to explode in this way and to become violent, and how can you prevent teenage dating relationships from spiraling out of control? And that's a very productive discussion for society to have. And it's, in its own way, there are as many domestic violence victims as there are victims of inner city gang violence. So it's a good discussion to have.
Well, on that note, actually, it's been a bit of a somber conversation with us today for our week in review. I want to lift us a little bit and turn to our hubbubs. You know, we could have talked about the budget. We could have talked about the Senate race. But Craig, we'll have you back to do all that
exactly
in future weeks. Because let's lighten the mood a bit and go to our hubbubs. And that's, you know, the stories that maybe didn't get the attention that we think they deserve. And Anthony, your hubbub.
Let's get Rico Petrocelli back in the studio to lighten the mood. No, my hubbub is about Rebecca Brooks. Now, that's the name, excuse me, of the former editor of the News of the World, the Rupert Murdoch London tabloid that was shut down this week after accusation that the paper's journalists hacked into the phones of
various
people.
Whose editor got arrested, too,
right, all kinds of scandal over there. So what's the local connection? Well, according to a story in today's Manchester Union Leader, which I love the story, that is, there's a freelance journalist in Dover, New Hampshire named Rebecca Davis. And in the wake of the scandal in Britain, her Twitter account has surged in popularity with dozens of new followers, many of them venting their anger against the British news executive who shares the same name. Here's an example of one tweet that's in the paper. You and Murdoch are exactly the same disgusting, sick-minded people, and I really hope you get arrested, tweeted one person. So it's a case of mistaken identity, and much to the credit of Rebecca Davis of New Hampshire, she's taken it all in stride. She wrote, I've been incredibly amused by it. This is the internet.
Better way of putting it.
She's sanguine until somebody hacks her account.
Peter, your hubbub?
My hubbub is what looks like good news but may not be completely good news, which is the sale of the luxury condominium at the Mandarin Oriental, the highest priced condo in city's history, the highest price, $13.2 million. That sounds great, and when you see that, you think, wow, the real estate market's coming back, until you realize that's only $100,000 more than it sold for 3 years ago. Mm. If you figure the realtor probably took 6% of that, and it's less than 1% appreciation in 3 years, you're going to understand why the housing market continues to hurt.
Especially when it hurts on the luxury end, which is oftentimes something that doesn't feel so much of a hit in a recession. Ugh.
Yeah.
Craig, you're
not much of an increase, but I think I'm still out of the running.
You're not going to bid that price up.
It'll come down. It'll come down to your price. You
gotta take it over exactly. Once it burns, of course, there's only one hubbub for this week. Shark!
Finally!
the inevitable semi-hysterical.
We seem so deep into the summer. Usually June is shark month, it seems.
And the always, always hard to swallow, so to speak, protestation from DCR, from state officials, that the sharks are after the seals, not after the people.
Speaking, oh, come on. Why do you find that hard to swallow? Because they are not man-eaters.
Well,
not
yeah,
purposefully.
But speaking as a man with the form factor of your average large seal. I'm not taking any chances. What can I say? I get this huge inflatable pool in my backyard.
Craig, just call me shark bait, right?
That's right. You know it. Not in Somerville. Not in Somerville.
Okay, sharks. All right. Well, I know that we're supposed to pick hubbubs that weren't sort of all over radio or the front page, but I have to talk about the fireworks brouhaha.
Oh, good.
I mean, that seems like an incredible hubbub. And by the way, Peter, the graphic that Boston.com had about the camera angles that... Well, let me back up. So for the five of you out there who don't know this story, apparently on Channel 4, for those of us who were watching the 4th of July fireworks at home, which was me this year, actually, because I have a little kid, so
never
she was in bed.
That,
we were at home. I was kind of spacing out, not paying close attention. And lo and behold, we find out that there were images of the State House, of Quincy Market, of Fenway Park that had fireworks
glorious
superimposed behind them. So people who aren't from around here would have thought, hey, great, you know, I could just sit on the lawn in front of Beacon Hill and watch a great fireworks show. But, of course, that is if the barge was, what, on the Zakim Bridge?
Precisely, as one wag put it.
So, I mean, I actually think this is a really big deal because David Mugar, the producer of it, says, hey, it's like we're celebrating the city, but it's not real.
Guy, don't do that. Yeah, that was probably the most interesting part of it. Appalling. Both parts of it are appalling. But for Mugar to defend it is really odd. And, it's just... It's the slippery slope. It's picking up speed, you know? It's a sad thing, particularly because I have to confess, if I did not watch, had I watched, I would have said, oh, fireworks over the State House, that's lovely.
You
and over the Huntington
people.
Polo Grounds, too. Isn't that a treat?
All right. Well, on that note, the man from the State House would have said it's lovely. It's Craig Sandler, general manager for the State House News Service.
Shark!
Have a great weekend, Craig. And Peter Kanellis, editorial page editor of the Boston Globe, thanks as always.
Thank you, Magna.